Hi, this is Larry London, and I welcome you to Border Crossings. Today, we are joined by singer, songwriter, composer, and multiple award winner. We'd like to welcome to the show Maura Smiley. Hello, Maura.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing really well, and it's really nice to be here.
Nice to have you here. Where are you located? Where's here for you?
Here at the moment is my home in Vermont in the Northeast of the U.S.
So you stayed true to Vermont. I guess you're from Vermont originally. You didn't move to Hollywood or New York or anything?
I did move to Hollywood. I've lived all over this country, and my longest time was actually in Hollywood. Well, next door in Silver Lake, but in those same hills. But yeah, I moved back, and part of the reason was to investigate what it is like to be a musician amongst family again, because I've been a nomad for so long and such a traveler. So
what's the music scene like in Vermont?
There are a lot. It's very active, and there are musicians here that are on the national circuit, you know, quite a few. And there's a tradition of musicians sort of music being part of the culture here, whether you're making money at it or not. So it's part of the cultural fabric too. And that's people playing either their own songs or for dances or for, you know, events that are happening. So it's a rich culture here. So my particular take and contribution is probably through singing, and I gather people to sing together, big groups of people to sing together. So that's sort of my way in here.
And I saw in one of your various different incarnations, and there's been many of them, you've done vocals with a quartet called VIDA.
Yeah.
I guess that must be an acronym for something.
It wasn't actually. We just picked that name because it meant life, and we just loved it. We were youngins, and we just. Mm-hmm.
And now you're with a group called Voco.
Yeah, Voco was I founded shortly after VIDA parted ways, and it was just a container for whatever music I wanted to write or collections of folk music that I wanted to sing.
And so it doesn't seem like you're in any particular hurry, because one album was 2005. The next one didn't come till 2018, called Unzip the Horizon. You might have released some other smaller albums, or with you as a solo artist versus with Voco.
Exactly.
And now you've got the Rhizome Project.
Yep.
As your newest album.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think the solo stuff is sort of spaced out between all the ensemble stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which has been my main bread and butter.
And so what is the Rhizome Project? What does it mean? I know there's a story behind it. So what is it?
Yeah, the story is that I've been a composer and continue to be a composer for voices. And that's sort of my strongest suit. But as a singer and a folk song collector, I noticed when I got to do some concerts with a string quartet that the ensemble of a string quartet is this really ferocious creature that can do whatever. And it's a virtuosic and ensemble that can make lots of atmosphere and different textures and colors. So it's really sweet as a storytelling musical partnership with a singer. So I decided, hey, I want to do a lot of this. And at the same time, it felt like a way for me to celebrate some songs that are so important to me and that kind of make up who I am as a musician. And that's when the concept of the Rhizome Project really coalesced, because it was the combination of these folk songs that mean so much to me and this ability to have them be their most powerful versions. By singing or by my arranging them with a string quartet. So that was the kind of coming together.
And reading through your bio, it says that the rhizomic concept is from sugar in the ground.
Yeah, that idea is just that when we're in, and you know this best of all, when we're in a situation where there's a lot of divisiveness in our culture and a sense that we don't belong to each other, that we are diametrically opposed, then I think culture and music and arts and literature and humanities, the job for us is to kind of come in and say, nope, we're still connected. And here's the ways, and here are the songs, and here are the stories, and here are the ways that we do, we are in the act of belonging to each other. So that's the sugar in the ground that I talk about, that is sort of this underground network, like a rhizome, like think of aspen trees or, you know, things that are connected and not seen necessarily by us, but nonetheless are powerful connectors between beings.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to ask if you do a song for us.
Ah, yeah. You know, I'd love to start out with a song that is called Now is the Cool of the Day, and it's by the great Gene Ritchie, who was kind of one of the folk music greats of the 20th century, because she both carried tradition from the Appalachian Mountains and wrote her own songs. And this song, she said to herself it was one of her favorite songs, and it's that she wrote, and it's she calls it a healing song. And it's called Now is the Cool of the Day. And it's the story of it is just that she has these four verses that talk about a human being encountering a divine figure. Maybe it's Mother Earth, maybe in her version, it's the Lord. And that divine being says, it's time to take care of each other and the planet. But she writes this in such beautiful, plain language. It's always been one of my favorite songs. So here's Now is the Cool of the Day.
Here's Maura Smiley on Border Crossings.
If you keep my grasses green, and I'll return in the cool of the day. Now is the cool of the day. Now is the cool of the day. Oh, this earth is a garden, the garden. Of green, you may live
Border Crossings now is the cool of the day.
Yeah.
And it is on the new album, the Rhizome
Project.
It's
on the new album.
Oh, well, that's great. That's excellent. Thank you for doing that. The video was great. I appreciate you making that performance for us. Now, I was looking through, as I say, you know, looking all through your resume and your bio, and it looks like you play a number of instruments. I see listed the banjo. I see you studied piano.
Mm-hmm.
How many instruments you play? Are you self-taught?
Well, yes, some of them are self-taught and some of them are, you know, classical music upbringing. So the piano was what kind of got me into music school. And kind of, I say piano was my map, the thing that made music understandable to me. And then the banjo came in later and also the accordion. And I play the joke instruments just to, you know, keep things real. Because mm-hmm. I think there are more jokes about banjos and accordions than any other instrument.
Well, that's great.
And cello, I play some cello. So that actually helped me to make this album, which, you know, it's really took a lot of learning to be to arrange for strings, which I really enjoyed. But it's a pretty steep learning curve. But playing the cello kind of gave me a little bit of an entree into that too.
Mm-hmm. You are so versatile. Do you have a favorite genre of music? Because you've done jazz, classical, and I don't have any idea what shape note singing is, but that's something you do.
Yeah. You know what it is? It's really, it's a very particular American thing, and it's old folk hymns that were made in the early part of this, you know, in the early part of the forming of the United States. There were settlers that came in, and it was a tradition from England, but it kind of got to be its own thing where people would get together and sing these sacred texts, but they were written by people who might have written them specifically for that weekend that a bunch of people from surrounding towns in New England would get together and sing. And they would sit in a square together. They wouldn't necessarily be in a church, but they'd get together and sing these sacred songs together in four-part harmony, sometimes three. And it was really loud and raucous and kind of not what hymn singing has become, which is like everything's kind of orderly and sweet sounding. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's got its own genre name, because it's sort of the precursor to the more staid hymns.
So what is your favorite genre? Is it, I know that you spend a lot of time studying medieval music and performing medieval music.
So yeah, I'm a total nerd, but yeah,
you need a drumstick when you do the, you know, you need to be chewing on a drumstick.
Right. Oh, for the medieval stuff?
Yeah.
Fire, yeah. I think I like things that are surprising to me, and but that carry the that are able to carry meaning for, I guess, for me. But I notice that I rarely sing love songs, and for me, singing is personal and political, and so I feel that what I want, my favorite genre, I would say, is music that has a sense of invitation to others to do it also. Even though I love virtuosic music, I want even that virtuosic music to turn to the listener and say, you too can be a participant in this. And that's my favorite type of music.
That's great. Now, if somebody came to you and said, Maura, you have to pick one thing. You can't be a composer, songwriter, singer, performer. You have to pick instrumentalist. You have to pick one thing.
What would you pick? I couldn't.
You couldn't pick, huh?
I mean, I think, and I just was, a friend of mine was asking me the same thing. And I think the reason that I have formed the life that I have is that I can't pick, and that I have two main missions in my life, which is to make others feel like they can sing and that they can be musical. And the other is to cultivate the richest version of music, to become music myself. So when I'm singing something and playing something, I want to be totally rid of any self-consciousness and just be the music, is how I describe it. So whatever activities can get me there, that's the activities I want. But yeah, I think each of the roles that I play, composer wise, I can sit by myself and I can make ideas happen. And I can think idealistically, like, how would this communicate to somebody? How does this make somebody feel belonging or feel surprise? Or, and so I can personally shape that to my heart's content. But when I'm a performer, I'm in dialogue more, which is a little bit more raucous and painful, but it's really cool, you know, to be, to encounter how people interpret something very differently than I would, you know, and to be in that conversation is important to me.
That's wonderful. And you have been, as I mentioned earlier, you've collaborated with so many different artists and groups, the Seamus Egan Project, and you've got your own group.
Yeah.
You do a cappella festivals, you do it all. So,
yeah,
you know, it's, can you define your music? What kind, you said you do political music?
I mean, I wouldn't say I do political music, and I would only say that because I feel that if a musician starts to do political music, it actually quickly goes out of date, even though I have heroes that have been very political with their music and have advocated for the downtrodden, have advocated for causes that have little voice. I think that is an important part of music, but I would say that my music is rooted, like rhizome, like rooted in tradition, but is always asking for the reinterpretation of the next person that decides to do it, so that everyone feels called in to actually be a musician, be a participant, rather than just a listener.
And what is the next song that we as listeners get to hear from Maura Smiley?
Let's do the kind of most fun and irreverent song that's on this album. It's called Soul Cake. It's from the western part of England. It's a really old song. You probably know it with a couple of different words, because it goes da 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 da, which sometimes is soul cake, but sometimes hey ho, nobody home, eat nor drink nor money ever. So it's kind of a famous old song, but it would be sung kind of like a carol, Christmas carol would be sung house to house, and you go and knock on the door and say, we've got a song for you, and in exchange for the song, you're kind of giving a blessing to the house, but also you're asking for food and drink, perhaps, you know, hopefully.
Yes. Drink was that. A big part of the medieval days.
Yeah. And so this tradition continues in some parts of England. And yeah, I just think it's this idea of of connection and through music, food, and drink. So here's Soul Cake.
All right. This is Maura Smiley on Border Crossings.
Soul cake, please good missus, a soul cake. Apple, pear, plum, or cherry. Any good thing to make us all merry. One for Peter, two for Paul, three for the one who made us all. God bless the master of this house and the mistress also, and all the little children that round your table go. The cattle in your stable, the dog by your front door, and all that dwell within your gates, we wish them 10 times more. Soul, soul, soul cake, please good missus, a soul cake. An apple, pear, plum, or cherry, any good thing to make us all merry. One for Peter, two for Paul, three for the one who made us all. Go down into your cellar and see what you can find. If the barrels are not empty, we hope you will be kind. We hope you will be kind with your apple and strawberry, for we'll come no more a soul until this time next year. The streets are very dirty, my shoes are very thin. I have a little pocket to put a penny in. If you haven't got a penny, a halfpenny will do. If you haven't got a halfpenny, well, God bless you. Soul, soul, soul cake, please goodness, a soul cake. An apple, pear, plum, or cherry, any good thing to make us all merry. One for Peter, two for Paul, three for the one who made us all. Soul, soul cake, please goodness is a soul cake. Apple, pear, plum, or cherry, any good thing to make us all merry. One for Peter, two for Paul, three for the one who made us all. Three for the one who made us all.
That's a slice of soul cake from Maura Smiley, who is our guest here on Border Crossings today. We're talking with Maura, who's in her home in Vermont. You have traveled the world. I guess you performed through Croatia, Bosnia, Serbia, Bulgaria. You've been to all those places. And I assume you've been to Ireland because you also do some traditional Irish music. Yeah. Do you have favorite places you like to go and perform?
I think I have been drawn to places through singing. And so that's been my filters, is whether someplace has a song tradition that I really love that compels me because it's got really beautiful rhythms and harmonies. And so, you know, Eastern Europe has incredible folk harmonies and like nowhere else on earth, right? And I was shown that music when I was young enough. So it was so important to me from age 12 on. Yes, Ireland and the whole Celtic connection through, you know, well, Northern Europe, even through ballads and into the British Isles and then into the Americas. That's an amazing river to kind of understand as a history of music. But yeah, and I feel like those old ballads and stories have a lot to say to us still. So I'd say, I just like going where people are investigating songs and enjoying them. And I think that's probably what's going to guide the rest of my travels.
What's the difference between the audiences at your shows in Eastern Europe or in America?
It's a good question. Often when I'm traveling in places that are not the US, I'm My role is sometimes to be the person who wrote a set of music that that community does, because I sell my music via sheet music. And so I often will visit a place that there's a choir of 100 people or something that has done a bunch of my arrangements. And so they bring me and they say, can you come here and you can work with us on the songs, and then you do your show also, and we can back you up. We can. So often I'm, bringing songs that they're interested in, maybe because they're folk songs, or maybe they really like my original writing. There is that same audience in the US. You wondered what the difference was.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that in the different locations, they're probably drawing on me, or they're asking for me for various reasons. Sometimes because I do really fun stuff with body percussion. Like I move a lot when I sing, and I have like little percussive routines that I do. And maybe some people really love that. And some people maybe ask me because I know a lot about folk music and I'm a total nerd. But then other people are asking me to perform for them because they're into social justice stuff. And I have a big repertoire of that too. So it's just depending on the community that asks me to do the concert. And then off we go.
And you're saying the Rhizome Project is something that we need today because we are so divided?
Yeah.
And it will help to unite us and bring us together, the music on the album?
Yeah, I think the music on the album, I'm not pretending to say that it's going to like heal things, but I think that the reason to have a collection like this is to invite somebody, the listener, to think about the songs that are important to them and the people that are important to them. The accompanying the album is a book, and it's a book of photographs of the people that are important to me, that I connect with the ideas in the songs, and their neighbors. And for me, it was an important way for me to stitch myself back in to the place I'm in, which is Vermont. But I offer this album and this book as a way to encourage others to think this way. Like, who are the people, even across the world, that are kind of make me who I am? And what are the concepts that are really important to me as a human being, that the music and what music represents that for me, you know? Mm-hmm. I think those kind of conversations are what I'm intending to cultivate.
And one of your job titles is composer. So I want to ask, have you ever scored a film, or do you have any desire to do that?
My music has been part of films. I haven't done a whole score. And I've also done music for video games. And then I have done full scores for dance and theater productions.
Mm-hmm. Wow, you have to change speeds for all of that stuff. The video games, you know, pretty high energy. And then.
Yeah. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, and so as a composer, my main job is writing music for vocal ensembles. So that, and that's its own little kind of genre of music that kind of takes care of itself and isn't really in the popular. I mean, there are some artists that are doing this on the world stage, doing beautiful choral music. But yeah, so that's my biggest job. And then around that, I just get to write what is important to me, and the forces that do it, like the people, the musicians that do it, that can vary.
And I always like to ask people who collaborate quite a bit, like yourself.
Yeah.
This is like a wish list, Maura Smiley's wish list. You could collaborate with any three artists. They could be dead or alive. Who would the three artists on your wish list be that you'd like to work with?
I watched you ask this question to other people and I was like, gosh, I hope he doesn't ask me that. It's really
hard. Had plenty of time to prepare.
I know. I should have prepared. Okay. One person that I really, really admire, that is a friend of mine, but I haven't actually gotten to collaborate with, is a musician named Sharon Nova. And she has a project called My Brightest Diamond. And I would love to work with her. We're on the brink of doing that. So that's very much in my my almost there wish list. Who else? Dead or alive?
Wide choice.
I actually just, this is a bit of a side note, but I just got to work with Laurie Anderson, the great Laurie Anderson.
Yes.
And that was very bucket list moment. Likewise, there's a composer and a singer and a mover dancer, Meredith Monk, who does really interesting work. And I'm trying to think of one person that's deceased. I always wished that I had met Béla Bartók, because I think the combination of being a composer and a folk song collector, that I really would love to have been able to talk to him about his life, bridging those two worlds.
Do you have children?
I don't.
No, okay. So there's no one to carry on the legacy. Nobody to pass the torch to.
Well, only through, my song children and my, I think there's some merit to leaving music that has a lasting application. And I think that that's what I'm doing, is I'm writing songs that a lot of people are singing. And that's the way that I can carry my sort of heart forward. Yeah.
Looking at all of the awards that you've won, the Lester Horton Award for Music for Dance, and you've participated in a sweepstakes, an acapella sweepstakes.
Oh, yeah.
You've got all kinds of awards to your collection. The Barbara Thornton Memorial Scholarship for medieval music. So all of these awards, all of these titles, all of these things, what's your favorite? What's your favorite accolade or honor to this point?
I think I have not, those are actually all kind of earlier in my career. And that was an important time as a young kind of, I think it was before I knew what my particular unique path was. And I think what was cool about those awards is that I was really useful to others really early on. And I shone in that role. And I think that's an important part of being a young musician. So I'm proud of those things. After those sort of earlier times, I now feel like I haven't done enough of being in those award kind of areas. Just last year I was on an album that was a Grammy nominated album. It was up in the screen with two other artists, but it didn't win. And that was cool. That was really cool. But and I think that if you are a musician here in the US, you have incredible privilege of getting up it out into, with these awards and all these things that have big impact. But to me, the most important thing is just doing what you do on the daily and answering the email from the young musician that says, "Hey, I'm a young composer and I really like what you do. And do you think it's possible?" And answering that email and saying, "Yes, it's possible. You're going to have to work like hell, but yes, you can do it."
Yeah. What's the best advice you ever got and who gave it to you in this business?
One good thing was my friend, I was kind of showing up late a lot in my 20s. And my friend just gently said to me, "Do you ever notice that our drummer who we were playing with, he's never late?" And I was like, he's never late in the music and he's never late for the gig. and imagine if he was. And I thought, okay, I won't be late anymore. So that was weirdly good advice, gently said.
You could have said, "No, I don't know he's late because I'm late." I'm exactly. always early because I'm late.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that the advice comes in. I feel like I'm surrounded by mentors. Yeah, both human and also I feel like in the natural world, I'm just watching plants and trees and animals. It just feels like I'm surrounded by geniuses. And if I keep my ears and eyes open, that you're going to have mentors all the time.
Now you have, in my opinion, I may be wrong, correct me if I'm wrong, but you've taken what seems to be a risk because you do different kinds of music. So when people say, oh, I love that sound and style, and then I'm going to go see Maura Smiley in concert, and they get a whole different sound and style.
Yeah.
Then they say, whoa, wait a minute. That wasn't who I thought it was.
Yeah. No, it makes for a beautiful life and a terrible career. Just like, you know, because I haven't been able to just kind of focus in on one.
Right.
It's just not my personality. It's just, yeah. And so
Europe,
it is
and that
hard
probably works well because Europe, they have more a diverse taste of music than in America. They expect you to kind of be in a lane.
Yes.
And to stay in that lane.
Yes, it's true. And I respect that deeply. And I have very successful friends who, for whom that is a bit more natural. There's just a brilliance that kind of comes out in a tractor beam this one way. And I think that's an important part of being a musician, if you can be that. But yes, I'm a person that will kind of just be useful, like I said, in these various genres. And that feeling of belonging and being a connector is important to me. And I honestly don't really want to be out in front all that much. Yeah, I like being there and being the music, but as a personality and being myself, Maura Smiley, I don't know. I don't really feel like being, I think I would be, I think being famous in that way, and having to constantly talk about what you're trying to do, would be exhausting. Yeah. So I like to do a lot more things that are a little bit more behind the scenes. Mm-hmm.
You're a subtle star.
I'm not a star. Let's just put it that way. But I do love focusing ideas and music through my performance and my writing. So
we've got Maura Smiley with us here on the program today, and we have time for one more song. So okay. What are you going to finish with?
So I was thinking of, and these are all recordings, videos. I got the string players together to do, and I threw this at them at the last minute. It's called Arlan Amor. It's on the new album. It's a Welsh song that I think it's one of the most beautiful songs. And I sing in Welsh, and I sing it with the person who taught me the song, whose name is Samantha Fox, and she's an artist and actor, musician. And for me, the song on a conceptual level is about, it's saying on the seashore, and it's celebrating this place, being in a place that is on a border. So I thought border crossing, this would be a beautiful song to do, that it's celebrating looking out from a piece of land where you feel belonging and into an unknown. And that's an important part of our job as human beings, is to put ourselves in those moments of the unknown, of crossing into the unknown, to investigate something that is unfamiliar.
And this song is called?
Arlan Imor.
Arlan Imor. Here is Maura Smiley on Border Crossings.
Arlan Amor, my lilies on you.
Border Crossings, and Maura Smiley is our guest, and that song in Welsh. I don't speak Welsh. How many languages do you speak?
I mean, I sing more languages than I speak. I'm only fluent in a couple languages.
How many have you sung in?
That's a hard, well, as a singer that's done classical music, you tend to do quite a few, and also folk polyphony. So I don't know, 20 languages maybe. Yeah.
Wow. Maura Smiley is with us, and we're going to wrap things up because I know she has a busy schedule. And we appreciate all the time you've given us. Now, if you've watched the show in the past, as you said you did, then you would know at the end, I always toss the microphone to the artist I'm speaking to send a greeting out to the audience around the world who, you know, obviously in places that you've been, everybody watching knows you. And also the troops who are tuned in to Border Crossings and the Voice of America.
Yeah. My message is to keep your heart open. Keep your hearts open as hard as it is. I'm just writing a lyric right now that says, we've got to be kind when it's hard to be kind. When the world is upside down, love, love, love. So that's what I'm trying to do. With that's hard work, that's good hard work.
And it sounds like, you know, that you spend a lot of time really immersing yourself into your songwriting, into your music, which is obviously evident in the success that you've had. And we're so thrilled to have you on the show and to be a part of the program and introduce the world to you who may not know you, and those that do know you to just check in with you. Where can people get the new album?
You could get it on, you know, all the streaming platforms and all, you know, all the usual places you find music. It's there. If you want to buy it outright, then go to bandcamp.com, and that you can get the physical book and album. Mm-hmm. And I just want to thank you, Larry, for your beautiful work.
It's my pleasure.
It's been a pleasure to watch all your interviews and that this is a voice out there in the chaos.
Oh yeah, we're in the chaos in the midst of it, I'm sure. Yeah. But thank you so much for being on the show. If people want to reach out to you, social media, website, where do they go?
Yep. So there's Instagram is Maura Smiley, Facebook Maura Smiley Music, and I don't really do the other ones, but those are the two. Yeah.
You have a main website?
Oh, and YouTube. Actually, there's a lot of things on YouTube. So YouTube and then Maura Smiley. Look up Maura Smiley.
And it's not pronounced like it's spelled.
I know.
So for the benefit of the listeners around the world, it's spelled Moira.
Yeah.
And Smiley, Smiley. So thank you so much for being on the show, Maura Smiley. What a pleasure to have you on. It's the Rhizome Project. That's the name of the new album. My name is Larry London, and you're watching Border Crossings on VOA TV.